Welcome to the Turkey Hunter Podcast with me, your host, Andy Galliano. In this podcast, I share with turkey hunters just like you how to have more turkeys on your hunting property and how to have more successful turkey hunts. I teach you how to do this with tips and interviews with turkey hunting pros, wildlife management tips, and entertaining turkey hunting stories. Tune in weekly as I share proven and simple strategies to help you have more success this turkey season. Make sure to head over to www.imturkeyhunting.com to subscribe to receive free turkey hunting tips, tactics, strategies, and product reviews. Also, please visit and like my Facebook fan page. Go to Facebook and search I Am Turkey Hunting, and also feel free to post your turkey hunting photos from this past season and let us know where and when you killed your bird. For all of you Twitter users out there, please follow me on Twitter, where my handle is @turkeyhitman, and I will be sure to follow you back. And now, for this week's show. Hello, and welcome back to this week's episode of the Turkey Hunter Podcast. You are listening to episode number 267, the Bone Collector Seminar from the 2019 NWTF Convention. And I am your host, and the guy who killed another doe with the air rifle this past Sunday morning. More on that in just a minute, but right now we are exactly 100 days, 8 hours, 43 minutes, and 22 seconds away from opening day of spring turkey season in Alabama. So this past Sunday morning, I went to my property south of Birmingham and was sitting on one of my food plots. And at around 7:30, I see a deer walk out into the food plot and walk over to my feeder. And there were two more with her. They got a little bit nervous after a couple of minutes and they walked off. I wasn't real upset with that because I didn't really have it in my mind to shoot a deer that morning. I'm trying to save some does to use as lure to attract some bucks, because our rut will not start there for, another 40 days. So I'm sitting there just waiting for something else to happen. And out of the corner of my eye, I see some movement, and there's another deer, and another one, and another one. And then the first three come back out, and then four come out, and then three more come out. There were 13 deer all kind of milling around the feeder at one point, all does. Well, so a mixture of does and fawns. But when I saw that many does, I thought, all right, there's one out of the bunch that is terribly skinny. Skinny to the point where you can count ribs. And I thought, okay, I'll take that doe. So I get my air rifle up. I must have been on that deer five different times. And any time that she was standing still, there was another deer behind her. So if she was still, there's another deer behind her. If she was moving, she was moving fast enough to where I wasn't comfortable trying to get a lung shot on her, because I didn't really feel like there was much of a reason to rush. So eventually I got the opportunity, and there's another deer harvested with the air gun. More deer in the freezer. So not only did I kill one Sunday, but my dad killed one Saturday afternoon, and my brother killed one Friday afternoon. So it was a pretty productive weekend for the Gallianos. All right, I've got a quick intro and outro and a slight change of plans for you guys this week. Last week I mentioned I was going to have three interviews from nominees for the board of directors for the NWTF. Well, I could not get all three of the nominees that I wanted on the phone this week, so my plan is to bring that to you next week. But this week I have for you guys the seminar that the Bone Collectors did at the NWTF Convention and Sports Show in Nashville in February of this year. Since I'm actually on my big December guys hunt, where we are chasing rabbits, squirrels, and deer, you and I are going to jump right into the seminar, and I'll see you briefly on the other side.
Well, how's everybody doing? Man, I'm going to tell you, man, thank y'all for coming out, and thanks for all the families represented here, you know, today. I mean, every year this thing grows, it gets bigger and bigger, and thank y'all for treating us like family, and I mean that. Like I've, We've never ever considered anybody our fans. Y'all our family, man. Y'all always treated us like family. And hope if you get a chance to come by the Bone Collector booth, hope y'all feel like family, you know, when y'all come by to see us. But man, there's so much to celebrate, you know, to see all these healthy youngins and some of you guys bringing y'all's beautiful wives. Y'all guys do pretty old good.
Yeah.
Not bad for a bunch of redneck turkey calls.
Hunters are overachievers.
You ain't lying. But we didn't have just a set agenda what to talk about. We just want to talk about what y'all want to talk about. And obviously, really don't need many introductions. To my left over here is one of my best friends in the world. He's Travis T-Bone Turner, the best archery wrench in the town. Y'all give it up for T-Bone. Get over here. He used to could find him at any bachelor party in the country. He was typically had his foot caught in the fun wheel. And he was like a gypsy everywhere. Hunting, fishing, he was single. But ladies, Nick Munn is tied a knot, and he's an officially... like the rest of us, man. He's got chores around the house and take out the trash.
My voice is a little higher.
Yeah, exactly. So to my right is another great friend of mine from the Dakotas, out in Spearfish, is Nick Munt here. Y'all give it up to him.
And without he needs no introduction, or the man that is in here in the middle, the Bone Collector sandwich, if you will, Mr. Michael Waddell, the National Wild Turkey Federation spokesperson. We like to call him Wadsworth, Guadalupe. He's got a lot of names, but by the end of this seminar, you're going to call him Martin Luther Waddell. I can't do it.
Shoot you, man. We're so excited to be here. Again, got my family down. Y'all might have seen my little boy Waylon. He's two. Nick's got his little girl. She's two as well. Della, she's running around down there with his wife Mallory. And I know T-Bone brought his whole family out, his wife Michelle, and his son Archer is here. They probably have spent every bit of his money he's made the last 2 years down at that cool zone working. Hey, have y'all been down to that cool zone yet? Have anybody been down there? Who's climbed a wall down there yet? Anybody? Come on, man. I had to show them it's like a jacked up ladder stand. I jumped right up it yesterday.
I've been working for you all day.
but yeah, there's so much to talk about. And definitely anytime anybody has a question, raise your hand. Like I said, there's a lot we can discuss and talk about. But so good to be back here in Nashville, Tennessee, and celebrate hunting, man. It's crazy if you look back the last couple years. And really, where the hunting industry has been, it's been somewhat of a crazy last several years as far as what's happened politically. Obviously, Lord have mercy. You know, it's funny, I never would have thought that hunting would be politically incorrect, but it's become that. And you see it all across the board. These celebrities, they can't post a picture of a turkey. They can't even affiliate, even having a chance to go hunt with us a lot of times. It's funny. And so it's amazing how... I guess it'd be, you know, extreme liberal or radical liberal left has just got it to where it's just really impossible to do certain things. But if it's not for shows like this, if it's not for people like us speaking up and showing up and proving what kind of assets we all are to not just hunting, but to an America. I mean, for me, the way I look at it is if I had to bet on, you know, the winning team, man, I'm looking out here at a bunch of men and women I know work. And work hard. When I shake y'all's hands, man, I'm insecure because they're callous, man. Y'all work with your hands. Y'all work hard every day. And I know there's a lot of different careers that y'all represent out here. But the number one thing is what I like about this room and here is, and really this whole show is, everybody here, when they bring their money to spend, you bringing money that, by God, you made through your hard work. You ain't asking no handout. And so that's why.
Yeah.
Nobody here is looking for a handout. Now, I know, obviously, if they have free turkey calls, somebody wants to get us. We'll all take it. I mean, you want me to give a run there. That's a different kind of handout. That's exactly right. Or the keys to a hunting gate. That's the best handout we can get. but there's so much we can talk about. But I know Nick and T-Bone got a lot they'd like to share. But also, too, if there's anything... you know, that y'all have thought, like, man, I wish if I'd ever meet Nick and T-Bone or Waddy, I wish I could ask them this. Maybe it's about a place to hunt. You know, maybe it's about, it can be, you know, something about maybe we've seen that we've experienced. Maybe it is, you know, an instructional something that, you know, we've been pretty blessed to hunt a lot of different places. So, obviously, We have our own opinions of what we like about them, and some of the better places go chase big whitetail, whether it's public ground, private ground, same with elk. So obviously we want to make sure that whatever it is y'all want to know or want to ask us, we give y'all that opportunity. So.
Yeah, if anybody has any questions, anybody got one right away? Go ahead.
I'm going to attempt bow hunting tournament this year. Can you give me a couple of two or three tips to get started on?
Well, I like to bow hunt turkeys a lot myself, and as far as I'm concerned, you know, it just depends on what you do, how big your property is. If you want to run and gun and set up like you normally would, you want to set up with a blind and a decoy, that's the best. So what I always do, and I've been super successful at it, is get some cameras out early, kind of figure out where your birds are chilling and hanging, and get out there, get your blind set up, and time spent is key. Get you a couple of good decoys, and I'd put your decoys close to the front of your blind. I always put mine out about 7 yards. Then it's pretty tough to miss. But one thing I think a lot of people make when you first start hunting turkeys with a bow is try not to shoot them kind of high in the breast, because they get away on you. I like to shoot them right at the top of the thighs. Take out their thighs, it drops them to the ground. They can't get air under the wings to fly off. Plus, if you hit a little bit high, then you just take out their, you know, you take out their guts and it's over. But I think the biggest thing when you're hunting out of a blind is just get into an area where turkeys can come out from a long ways away and see your setup, and they're going to come to it. And I think you'll have a lot of success at it, because just sitting in one spot, you don't spook turkeys. Because where I live now, I've got two little pieces of ground I can hunt. One's 80 acres and one's like 125 acres. And I can't run and gun and move around, because if they spot me, it's over, and they're not going to be back for a while. So I sneak in. I typically have a blind already set up because I've had a camera there early. And right about at this time of year, kind of when the end of the season, or the season before the season starts, I put out a little bit of feed just to kind of figure out where stuff's at. And then just literally spend as much time as you can, get your decoys out, call very little. All you got to do is just let them know where you're at, because then they're going to come out into the field, they're going to see the decoys, and they're going to come to them. And to me it's pretty dang easy way to hunt turkeys. It's not as exciting as running and gunning, but go ahead.
Is there a certain way you need to position your decoys for better bow hunting?
I have the best luck with a hen out in the front, a jake decoy in the kind of pre-breeding position with his head kind of cocked back a little bit. I like to put him just a little bit behind her, kind of quartered away, and it just seems like when those birds come in, they're going to come around and they're going to try to get right in front of him. They're going to get right in his face. So position your decoy where that bird's going to be right in front of you. And like I said, closer to me is better. You don't want to put them at 20 yards because they're just that margin for error, because sometimes they come in real super slow. If it's a single time, he'll come in and he'll strut around real slow. If two or three of them come in together, you know, sometimes they'll, you know, run around, so it's a little bit tougher. So a closer shot is always best. And I think you'll have a lot of success at it if you got birds in your little area that you're hunting. It's pretty fun.
Another thing I'll add to bow hunting, if you do decide to do it out of a blind, you know, hunt out of a blind, which, like Nick said, I think that's the best higher odds. Heck, you know, let's steal that chair to them. But, you don't have to worry about where you put your blind. You can put it right out in the middle of a field. Those turkeys pay no attention. So obviously that blind, even though it's big and you can buy a bunch of different kinds of blinds, the turkeys don't mind it at all. They don't pay any attention to it. So whether you're deer hunting them kind of, or you're running and gunning. And I know a lot of people, they'll still run and gun, and they'll have a blind, they'll pop up real quick. Me personally, I've bow hunted quite a bit for turkeys. I've never liked that style of sitting and waiting, because I guess I spend so much time deer hunting that I'm just sitting waiting, that finally I look forward to spring where I can kind of be on the offense and I'm being more aggressive. And so you can still do it without a blind, and my goal was to kill a grand slam out of the blind just because I wanted to do it like I would do with a shotgun. And you can do that, but I think the key to that, even hunting if you're on open air or by a tree or whatever, the key still is put your decoys, if you're going to use decoys, put them close and put them off to the edge. But you want those turkeys as close as possible. In the last several years, with, you know, a lot of the video footage you see, it's proven that you can get away with more than you realize, because once they commit to a gobbler decoy especially, they're coming in such a mad aggression. that a lot of times they're so focused on it, you have an opportunity to still get drawn back. And the toughest thing I found with bow hunting turkeys is not necessarily getting a gobbler within range or even coming to full draw. It's actually making an efficient shot. One of the reasons I don't hunt a lot with a bow is because, you know, a lot of you guys might have done it before. You can get an arrow in that you will lose a lot of turkeys. And so I think the key is getting them as close as you can for me.
And preseason scouting is key. If you can get some cameras out and figure out where they're hanging in the afternoons or after they fly off the roost and breed in the morning and come out to a field, that's the key of the whole thing is you want to be where you know they're already going to be. And using sight and distance to where if they come out on a power line or somewhere far away, if they come out to look on that power line, they can see your decoys from a long ways away, and I think that'll really help you a lot.
And always scout your buddy's turkeys first.
But preseason scouting is huge, because if you're seeing turkeys in an area every day, you say 4 o'clock, they're coming into this field, get your butt out there at 1:30, get set up, wait on them, just don't overcall. Just a few little calls to let them know you're there, and they'll come.
Yeah, something to add to what Waddell was saying about the efficiency of killing them with a bow, I would kind of add, a lot of people shoot them, you know, try to shoot their body, but we know when they're blowed up and they're strutting, they're so three-dimensional, so they're almost like a hefty sack, so it's kind of hard to see where their vitals are, and their vitals are so small. The few times that I have bow hunted for them, I've always, and I've read so much about it, and a lot of people that I've talked to have done this, but their head is about the same size as their vitals in their body, and trying to pinpoint where their vitals are and get that, and them not flying off. So what I would encourage someone to do is to aim for their head. One, you got something to aim at. If you miss, you miss. And if you hit it, you're going to kill it. So, you know, I'd much rather have a clean miss as to wound a turkey and then never recover it because it flew off.
And then when he faces away from you, where all those feathers come together in the back, there's that little thing about that big right there.
Yeah.
You can hit there, too.
That's a good shot. For sure.
Texas heart shot, right?
Exactly. Any y'all got any more questions?
My woman got me in turkey hunting 2 years ago. So year one, I just wore my whitetail hunting clothing.
Uh-huh.
And clearly, inside of a blind, it's the you know, solid black kind of to absorb that color.
Right.
And about the day after turkey season ended, I read an article that said, wear black in a blind.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on that?
I think black in a blind is great. I don't know what it is. It's always blowing my mind, like crows and turkeys, how, and really even deer. I mean, ground blind hunting to me has revolutionized how we can go about it, even for white-tailed deer.
Right.
There's something about, and I'm not a biologist or somebody that understands the retina and what they see. Obviously, I know turkeys are really big. Obviously, their eyesight's the number one defense.
Right.
It's also one thing that, man, I've learned as a turkey hunter over the years, especially how now aggressive you can go at them, how you can manipulate their eyesight. I mean, they're really, I hate to say it, but I mean, a turkey is, they're just horny or hungry. That's all they're worried about. That's it. That's it. I mean, that's, I don't know a polite way to say it other than that.
Black top on. Black hair.
I don't even, you know, the thing I found in those blinds, you don't even, when you get back in the shadows, you can, if you got black, you don't even wear a headnet in there.
Just disappear.
And I decided to run the gun, pull the top off, camo underneath.
Yep.
And then camo.
That works great.
The thing about it too is like what he said earlier. When they come in and they commit to the decoys, I mean, you can do jumping jacks in the blind. Yeah. They're usually locked in and they're coming hard, so it really doesn't matter, you know, what you got on your face or anything, because they're just so locked in when they come in there, you can do whatever you want.
And there's something about the way that shadow is. They don't see, because I tell you what I've noticed as much as turkeys is crows. You know, it's illegal to bait in Georgia for deer. And I've had, you know, look, I ain't run no macho man contest. If it's legal to throw out corn, I'm going to throw it out, son. And I notice a lot of guys, I get tickled.
A lot of head shaking.
But I've noticed too, blowing away them blinds, it's crows. You know, crows will land out there, and y'all don't have to slip a crow with you. You can't, I mean, you ain't gonna flip up on no crow. They can see like a turkey or whatever. And those crows would just sit out there and be 10 yards, and you can just be in there talking and whatever, playing on your iPhone, and they just, like, they don't see you. Yeah, you can feel, yeah. So those blinds are unbelievable, even for deer hunting, especially on these kids. I do, and I tell you.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, and on deer, I don't think turkeys it matters. I'll tell you what I have learned with deer.
And watch the sun, too.
Yeah, sometimes that sun will come in on you. And what I've learned, too, is like if you're going to, like, especially for deer and them blinds, another thing, you know, the fun part of it is you want to brush it in, but it's not necessary. I've set up some blinds in the middle of a food plot. I mean, absolutely in the middle of a food plot. I mean, the deer get used to it and they come out, no different than a big shooting house. And what I will do, though, if you're going to, is when you get in it, go ahead and let the windows down that you feel like you're going to make your shots out of. Because if it's all of a sudden it's closed, and then the day you go hunt it, then it's got these big black, very obvious holes in it. They still can't see you, but I think the blind itself then spooks them. So go ahead and get the blind. Yeah, it is frustrating times, because sometimes you have birds.
For deer especially.
Turkeys, it don't matter. I mean, a turkey ain't the sharpest joker out there, but it's amazing how aggravating they can be, you know, when it comes to...
But a ground blind has just, I mean, you see all the TV shows now that are using them. I mean, it's just revolutionized hunting, because, I mean, how many people 20 years ago, you went to a spot and just a bunch of brush, it was like, well, there's no trees, I can't get in the tree, how am I going to kill anything here? Now you can take a blind, put it right into the brush it in, you're good to go. So you got a big cornfield, the deer coming out into a cornfield, there's no way to get out there. Now you just brush the blind right into the corn stalks, cut the corn out in front. I mean, it's just, they're phenomenal. So, I mean, we've killed all kinds of stuff out of blinds. I shot an elk in Oregon out of a redneck blind this year out of a water hole, so pretty amazing. Wow.
Any more questions?
What's the worst hunt you ever had? What's the best hunt you ever had?
The worst and the best? Man, it's funny. Sometimes, man, I have to think about that. I mean, the best ones are easy, obviously. And I guess the worst ones are, too. I was talking about this the other day. I was telling somebody the other day, you know, as far as hunts I've been on, I haven't been on any hunts. I've been on some hunts to where you get there and maybe it was a friend or an outfit or sell you something that just turned out to be not even close to what it was. I think we've all been on those hunts. Or maybe you get in a hunting club and you think it's going to be this or that. And, you know, man, ain't nobody turkey hunt. Hey, man, don't nobody turkey hunt. You're like, dude, that's the main reason I'm getting this club. And you show up that Saturday morning, there's 30 people hunting the same 200 acres trying to hear a turkey gobble. Like, yeah, nobody turkey hunts, right. So, I mean, we've all experienced that. But for me, probably the only hunts I can think of looking back that was kind of turned out to be not so good were those ones in out-of-country experiences where the civil unrest become, you know, like, wow, this is kind of, you know, spooky, you know, whether it was a trip to Africa or, you know, even down in Mexico a few times, it's gotten kind of, you know, weird in a couple of occasions. And then that's when you just, it's not even about the animal, you think, holy cow, get my butt back to America. You know, you realize, like I always talk to Jim Shockey, I'm like, you have lost your freaking mind. You can be killed hunting an anteater in Cambodia. It's crazy, man. I'm like John Wayne, run around like John Wayne. And so for me, that's the hunts that, even though they kind of turn out to be weird, me and Nick been on a few times. And when we were younger, I mean, we're in our 40s now, but Nick and I especially, and T-Bone would always be game to do a lot of stuff, but Nick and I seemed like we'd always have, like, hey, man, we're going to try this. I mean, this goofball went to, where was that? You went to some Afghanistanian company.
Yeah, Pakistan, yeah.
I mean, what idiot goes to Pakistan to hunt unless you're an Army Ranger or a Special Ops?
Never know what you're going to get to shoot.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, some of those countries you get, like I was in Botswana one time or South Africa, and they stole all my money. I had like an idiot, I had my money in a bank envelope, and they stole all my money, and then police had pulled us over, which didn't have police uniforms on. They was dressed as civilians, but they was trying to get more money out of me, and I didn't have no more money.
And then it gets mouthy in a country where they don't like us anyway.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't know what I was saying. I sure didn't know what they were saying. But I was really saying, I don't have any more money. You know, like, I mean, take what you want. I ain't got nothing. So, you know, the situation like that are kind of spooky that turn out to be, you start realizing, well, I don't care what I hunt. I kind of want to get home. And, you know, and so for me, a lot of those hunts have helped me realize that, man, America's unbelievable. Matter of fact, that kind of stuff has helped me realize why, not to get political, now I know why socialism don't work. You know, when you're over in Botswana and everybody around there is out there, you know, chipping on an ebony bowl trying to sell it to me for $10 and it's worth, you know, $700 in the States, and they're all sitting around for somebody to kill the fatty calf in town, that would suck. And I think that's what's happening in America. So it's like, man, you can raise your own cow, you can go shoot your own deer, and if you go work, you can go buy chicken in the grocery store. You know, I'm not sitting around like, man, I wonder if I'm going to show I'm hungry, hope to kill that goat today. You know, so that's where I realized even quite a bit about politics. Like, this don't work, you know. Me and Nick showed up in Botswana one time, you remember, and had a load of elephant meat. And so I've never been like excited or wanted to hunt an elephant. But we had a friend of ours that had bought one, $50,000 he spent to go hunt this elephant. And all the money went to build schools and buy funeral tents and chairs for so many families that were dying of AIDS. It was unbelievable. And so all of the elephant goes, they basically rotate the villages, and so all the meat goes to those villages. And so we loaded them up on an old Massey Ferguson tractor with a trailer on the back. I'm talking about an old hay trailer. And we carving this elephant up and throwing the meat on the back of this trailer. Dirt, I mean, you know, it wasn't super clean. It was part of it. It was all just cutting chunks off of it. No rhyme or reason to the madness other than cut a big chunk of elephant meat, throw it in there. You don't move elephant once he hits the ground. And we got, I don't know, we got a whole trailer full. This, I don't know how much, I mean, it's full.
Thousands of
200
pounds of meat.
And we leave, and we got about an hour and a half drive to get to this village that's going to get the meat, and we're going to meet with their chief there. And the whole way, there was people running out of the brush, jumping and attacking our trailer to try to steal a piece of elephant meat. And if any of your husbands brought home a piece of this elephant meat for you to cook them, you'd run them out of the house. You know what I mean?
It tastes like an old wallet.
Yeah, we tried to eat it. And I can tell you right now, son, it made old liver. Like, you'd get excited about eating liver and onions if you don't like it. But we get to the village, and we get there and pull up, and I ain't lying. Nick was there. There was a line, like, coming into this registration. There was a line of people out there with bowls and pieces of tinfoil, and there was in line mostly ladies in the village getting wanting a piece of elephant meat. And the chief comes running up to me and says, "This is not enough meat." I said, "It's an elephant. That's all we can. It's the best we can do."
You can't find an animal that has more meat.
Yeah, exactly. This is it. It's not enough meat. I said, "Well, we couldn't harpoon you a whale on the way." And so I realized right quick, a lot of these anti-hunters and stuff. And here it is. You know, we're all blessed out here where, you know, usually you kill enough deer where, you know, you put two or three in your freezer and your family eats it. And typically there's always a family or two. No matter what the social structure, where they're at, you know, economically, you give them a deer, and you can provide a lot of meat for a lot of people. I mean, they're fighting over meat, and if you shut that down, and somebody don't go hunt that elephant, they don't have a school, they don't have a funeral home, they don't have tents, they don't have a way to dig a grave. So I learned a lot about politics just hunting over there. Some of those hunts were kind of spooky for me. And then some of the best hunts, there's no doubt the best hunts for me was probably my favorite all-time hunt was when I took my dad on that first elk hunt, and he killed that elk with a bow. Just all the hard work he had done for me as a kid, and him and mom. And, you know, I was in a place to where I could finally financially afford to buy him a private ground Colorado elk hunt in a really good spot where I'd seen Primo's guys hunt, you know. And so when he shot that bull, man, I cried. I was just on cloud nine. So that was probably my favorite hunt. And I think that's cool. One thing cool about most hunters is, you know, I got my favorite things that I've shot, but seems like, and you know, as older I get, the more sentimental I am about seeing somebody else do something. So it means as much to see my kids succeed. And even some of the trophies I've been in camp with these guys, you know, and vice versa then with me. You know, Nick and T-Bone were both in camp when I shot my biggest buck I'd ever shot on a piece of ground that I'd saved and bought in Kansas, you know. And so, like, we were just high-fived. And I learned something about hunting. If you hunt with buddies that ain't proud of you, and, you know, when you do find success in hunting, hell, ain't you, buddy. And I think that's the problem we got in the hunting industry. You know, it's nice to have people that are fired up for you and want to celebrate. You know, they want to crack open a cold beer around the fire and celebrate if you killed a deer you've been after. And whether he's a big one or a little one. And so, I guess my biggest blessing hunting has been I've always had a group of buddies and friends and a family that, you know, we've always lifted each other up and picked on each other really, really hard when we do screw up, because we've all missed plenty. So so that's kind of my favorite and worst all in one.
And I think for sure the good hunts outweigh the bad ones by a long, long ways. I mean, I can only think of really a couple in my whole life hunts that I went on that I could actually say were bad. But the good ones have far outweighed, and like Michael said, been able to hunt a couple of times with my dad. He and I went to Russia together and shot some big brown bears. And then this past season, we always do a big youth hunt at the Navajo Nation, and then we do an elk hunt and a mule deer hunt there. And Michael allowed me to take my dad on the elk hunt this year, so my dad and I both shot really nice bulls. And then we went up to the youth hunt and had a great hunt. And, you know, it's just experiences like that, you know, getting to take your family and of course, we get to spend a lot of time together, so a lot of the hunts that we've done are really memorable, but I think some of those were, you know, the special times are when you get to go with somebody in your family member that you don't always get to hunt with, or, you know, I'd love to hunt with my dad more, but work just, you know, keeps us from doing that too much, and so that was just a pretty special moment for me to take my dad, and, you know, we both killed our biggest elk on the trip, so probably my most memorable one.
Well, that P-Ball, what it is?
I don't know. I hate to even complain about saying I have a bad hunt, and I know this is going to sound kind of cliche. I just am appreciative about getting to go hunting, you know, enjoying the time out there, and I hope all of you feel this way too, that when you kill the critter or whatever, that's just the cherry on top. I mean, for the guys that are going out there and expecting, like, well, I didn't kill anything, and they're all bummed about it and then upset and got their lip poked out, well, to me, that they're not doing the hunting for the right reasons. I mean, there's so much more to hunting than just, you know, killing the critter. Like I said, that's just the cherry on top. The coming to the national conventions like this, the fellowshipping with all your other fellow hunters and outdoorsmen, and going shopping at the stores and reading the magazines and looking up stuff online and reading all the blogs and the podcasts and learning all about the new products that are coming out. That all just kind of adds to the ingredients of when you get to go share hunting camp, those work days that you're at your lease, or you're going out to the public land and stuff, and you're getting to, you know, chop limbs and put in food plots and, you know, put out bait sites and stuff like that. All of those and getting data from your trail cameras adds to the pride factor, I like to call it, of killing the critter. So I hate to complain too much about that, but I got off subject a little bit there. But I guess the one that I was trying to sit here and think is that as they were talking, one memorable hunt, I was Audad hunting actually. We wasn't filming or anything. We was down in the Davis Mountain Range in southwest Texas. And one of the guys in the group had shot an Audad, and we went to track it. He had shot it, thought he made a good shot, but, you know, because we weren't filming it, we couldn't see exactly where he had shot. And he was so excited. It was a big Audad, and one that had been coming into this area and using the rim rock. So we went to track it, and we went to tracking it down in these gullies and stuff. And in this part of Texas, and some of y'all have probably been in some real remote areas, you don't see street lights. I mean, there ain't nothing out there. I mean, we're real close to the Mexican border right near Del Rio, and this one guy had showed us the day before where there were backpacks. He called it Backpack Hollow, and what it was is where the illegals were coming across the line and dumping their backpacks. So you know, there was illegals coming across this property, and we were hunting Audad. So we're out there in the middle of the night, and it's New Year's Eve, and it's cold. I mean, it's temperatures are getting down there kind of cool, and we're trailing this Audad forever and ever, looking at the blood trail on the Cleachy Rock, and we're going down through there, and we're getting down in this hole, and you get turned around real easy. And then we was kind of lost, and we had a UTV up at the top of the hill, way back up at the top of the hill. And when I'm saying way, it might not be way to y'all, but it's
50
way
yards or so.
Way 50 yards on a slope like this.
But nonetheless, seriously, we was getting kind of concerned, and we got the Audad, and we were all high-fiving, and it was like we had no idea really which way to go. I mean, because there's no roads, we didn't really know which way to go. And the only thing that I shouldn't say the only thing, we'd have got our way about it, but we could have walked the wrong way for a long ways before we got our bearings. But we were sitting there trying to figure everything out. We gutted that Audad and been celebrated and high-fived and took a few pictures, and now it's like, man, we was kind of concerned how to get back to the UTV or even closest road, or no cell phone service, couldn't call nobody back at camp or nothing like that. So about that time, it struck midnight, which was New Year's Eve. We could see way off in the distance, we knew that was Sonora, and then there was fireworks going off. So we knew, don't go that way. We need to go this way to get back to UTV. So, I mean, that's just one little old story, but that was a little, you know, I was going to have to walk an extra 100 and something yards.
When you're in a group and you get to an animal like that, you say, that's not my dad, it's not your dad, that's our dad.
That's our dad. As far as a memorable hunt, golly, there's so many memorable ones. I shot a 8-point buck here at my house on my recurve, and it was only like 110 inches or 100 inches big, but man, I was so proud of that because I killed it with a recurve. I always wanted to do that. But one story I'll tell y'all, that it was the first year of Bone Collector, and I've been putting in, if y'all have ever hunted Iowa, you have to put in for it. It usually takes about 4 years to draw that Iowa archery tag. Well, I had drawn this tag even before, or knew I was going to draw it before we even started Bone Collector. So this was the first year Bone Collector, and I was going hell or high water. I was going, whether we filmed it or not, I was going to put in my time. I'd been wanting this, and And I'd always wanted a buck, you know, 150 inches or bigger in the Midwest. Anyway, we carved out some time, and we were just figuring everything out with Bone Collector. Didn't have the right camera guys or didn't know who could go what. And Nick's ran a great camera for a long time, so it worked out good that Nick could come down from South Dakota, and he met me in Iowa. And it was just so memorable because of, you know, we were all just, you know, barely getting by, I guess you could say, scratching out. And I'm so proud of our humble beginnings. And Nick comes down in his 4Runner. He's got an old Toyota 4Runner. He's got a trailer that we could load down with all the stands. And when I say a trailer, guys, I'm telling you, we called it the rabbit trailer because it looked like, I mean, the wheels was barely bigger than a dinner plate. I'm telling you. It was one of the trailers. Yeah, and you could haul. If we killed two deer, we couldn't haul it out. And it was one of them ones that tracks behind the 4Runner just doing like this. No rhyme or reason. It was so awesome. So we had all the stands on there. And Whitetail Properties had given this told us this piece of property that we could hunt. We had hunted the first of the season, hunted about 5 or 6 days with Lee and Tiffany, and they ain't got good ground, so I didn't kill no deer on there. So I had to come back. So Whitetail Properties had let us have this tract of land. They'd never hunted it. They just said, hey, we got this tract of land. It's in the unit that I've drawn. Have at it. Y'all go scout it. Gabe and Eric come over there and kind of show us the guidelines. And then me and Nick went to scout, and we scouted it, put up some trail cameras. We hung our own stands, and Nick and I went in there on about the third or fourth morning when the wind was right for this certain area, and we rattled and snort wheezed.
All right, that's all I've got for you guys for the free portion of this week's episode of the Turkey Hunter Podcast. If you would like to hear the rest of the seminar with the Bone Collectors, then you will need to become a subscriber to the premium content of the Turkey Hunter Podcast. And in order to become a subscriber, what you'll need to do is text the word Turkey Hunter. Make it one word with no spaces, but text that to the number 44222. After you send that text out and follow some simple instructions from there, eventually I'm going to email a link to you that you can click on to become a subscriber to the premium content of the Turkey Hunter Podcast. So what you'll do when you click on that link is you will create your username and your password for the Podbean application, and you'll pay the $18 per year annual subscription fee for the premium content of the Turkey Hunter Podcast. Your $18 will get you not only the rest of the seminar with Bone Collectors this week, but it will give you access to all of the premium content for all of our past episodes, as well as the premium content for the next 52 weeks. There is a bunch of content locked up under the premium subscription, and that $18 that you would spend to have access to that for a full year is a drop in the bucket, and I don't think you'll regret your investment. I hope you guys enjoyed the Bone Collector Seminar. Like I said, last year, Waddell does get a bit too political, which I think can isolate some hunters because not all of us hunters have the same political views that he does. And I don't think we really need to be isolating certain groups of hunters. I think that we all need each other these days as hunters. But what I do admire most about him is that he seems to have no issue being open with the public about his love for hunting. And because of that, he does draw a lot of heat from anti-hunters. And if he's willing to take that heat and fight that fight for us, then by all means, as far as I'm concerned, he can fight that fight. So in that respect, he's a great spokesman for all of us hunters, and my hat's off to him for that. So that's all for today, but please do me a favor before you forget about me until next Thursday. Please be sure to leave a 5-star rating and review for the Turkey Hunter Podcast on your podcast player app if you have not already done so. That's a huge help for people who stumble across the show while podcast surfing, and your rating and review is a huge help for me too, because if the show has enough good reviews out there, then those who do stumble across the show probably will take a few minutes to stop and listen to it. So with all of that said, I have to say now, thank you guys so much for tuning in this week. I know that you have choices. I appreciate you spending your time with us. I hope you have a wonderful week, and I look forward to seeing you again next week. Goodbye.
Thanks for tuning in.
You were just listening to the Turkey Hunter podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please go on over to iTunes and leave a 5-star review. And make sure to head over to www.iamturkeyhunting.com to subscribe for free turkey hunting tips, tactics, strategies, and product reviews to help you have a more successful turkey season. And stay tuned for upcoming episodes on hunting afternoon birds, how to film your hunt, and the breeding cycle of hens, as well as some guest interviews. Thanks again for listening. We know your time is valuable, and we appreciate you sharing some of it with us. See you next week.